This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This is Behind the Rose, where Bachelor Nation meets country music and everything in between. Here's your host, Blake Horseman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Behind the Rose podcast. I'm your host, Blake Horseman, here with my buddy, as usual, Eric Bradley. And today, we are actually going to do something a little different. We are going to do a Meet the Team podcast. You kind of get an inside scoop on all the four members of Behind the Rose podcast. And we're going to start off today with somebody you guys probably, well, Denver knows him really well. Those of you that aren't in Denver listening, you may not know him, but he is the owner of the Grizzly Rose, Scott Durlin. Thanks for coming on, Scott.
You betcha. Thanks for having me. It's good to see what you guys actually do.
And as much as we talk about the Grizzly Rose, yeah, let's bring on the man behind the Grizzly Rose.
Yeah, exactly. He is behind the Rose. Yeah, exactly.
Behind, huh?
Behind. So Behind the Rose podcast actually started, Eddie, when was your first episode really of the original podcast?
I want to say 2017.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
So 2017 was how long... Technically, the Behind the Rose podcast, we kind of just revamped it and rebranded it, if you will, within the last year. But it really did start on a tour bus behind the Rose with Eddie. So Scott obviously is a big part of that. So it's kind of cool to see the podcast started and everything. But I want to sit down with Scott because, like we said, he owns the Grizzly Rose here in Denver. We talk about, like Eric said, as much as we possibly can, a lot on podcasts with all the different musicians and stuff. We just had my birthday there, which was a huge success, a lot of fun.
Well, tell me about it. What did you guys do? I was out of town.
We did what we normally do with the Rose, just kind of get sauced up.
Danced. Yeah. I had my pitcher of tequila soda, walking around with my pitcher of tequila soda.
We're never overserved there, so.
Well, I wish we could have been.
Well, we'll probably get into that now. You were probably doing your real job.
I'm not sure what my real job is, but yes, I was flying. I had to do a San Jose, Costa Rica is where I was that particular day.
So you're right. I don't know which one. What is harder, either being an airline pilot or owning the Rose? I don't know which one is your real job here. But yeah, Scott also is an airline pilot for Delta,
which just made national news for saving the best team in the NBA's lives.
They are the best team. And they sent me a whole box of gear, by the way.
I was going to say, you have to have season tickets for life by them.
Don't have season tickets, but I did get literally an entire box full of shirts and jerseys and stuff like that.
That's pretty cool. So walk us through that. So those of you that don't know, base, how long ago was this, Scott? Like a month?
About a month ago.
Yeah.
Start by, for everybody that doesn't know, yes, I'm an airline pilot, and I was actually an airline pilot well before I owned the Grizzly Rose. I got furloughed from Delta in 2004, and that was one of those things that made me decide that I better go look for another career because I wasn't sure that I was going to be flying airplanes for the rest of my life because, you know, after September 11th, the airline business was terrible. And so that's what brought me eventually to buying the Grizzly Rose. And I started that in the end of 2007, ended up closing on it in 2009, really. But basically from about 2007 on, I've had the Grizzly Rose. And it was started out as kind of my backup side project. And now I think it's my primary job. I don't think that, I mean, I fly full time for sure, but the Rose is definitely the bigger part of my life. Unfortunately, I am gone occasionally when I'm out flying airplanes, like I was for your birthday.
That's kind of interesting, though. So you kind of bought it as a backup project, but now that's become kind of your primary thing.
Right.
Now, flying is like your side gig. So that's kind of cool.
It's great because when I'm out flying, I have something fun to talk about with the other guys I'm flying with. And when I'm at the bar, I have tons to talk about when I'm talking to my customers and friends and artists and stuff at the bar too.
Let's get into that, because one cool story you'll be able to tell for the rest of your life is that flight where basically, okay, so what was it like? You're flying the Utah Jazz, right? And you hit at the time. What did you think at the time happened?
The airplane I fly is a 757 and 767 for Delta. The NBA owns, I think, 9 757s that they own, and they charter through Delta Airlines. So Delta supplies them the pilots, the maintenance, you know, all the ground support, all that kind of stuff. And then they just fly the NBA where they need to be. And then occasionally, I think the NBA charters that to the NHL. So we fly, usually with those airplanes, we fly the NBA for charters and we fly the NHL. And so we do it quite a bit. About a month ago, we were taking the Utah Jazz from Salt Lake City, where I was based, to Memphis. They were going to play the Grizzlies. This was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Everything was normal. Last basketball player got on the airplane and we shut the doors and took off runway 35 in Salt Lake City. And as we're climbing out and about 4,000 feet above the ground, which is pretty high to hit birds, I saw a flock of what I thought were seagulls. That's what they look like. But you only had a split second. You don't have any time. And I said, birds. We both ducked because there were so many of them coming at the windscreen of the airplane. And as I lifted my head back up after ducking and hearing multiple boom, 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 things hitting the airplane, I looked at the engine instruments and we'd lost the left engine that fast. It was gone. And the airplane started to shake. And so the other guy was flying and I said, you lost the left one. And I immediately grabbed the mic and told air traffic control that we needed to come back to the airport, that we'd hit birds and we'd lost an engine. And we started our turn back around and then getting the airplane configured and doing the emergency checklists and all that stuff. The whole flight only took 14 minutes. The scary part about it was that the airplane was shaking, like really bad shaking. And that's not normal for an airliner, especially a jet. I know now why, but at that time we didn't have any idea. And all I could think about was Sullenberg and landing in the Hudson, because what he did is they struck bird and they took him in both engines. And I was just waiting for that other engine to quit. We'd already lost the left engine. And I was super concerned that we were going to lose the right one as we were coming back to the airport. So we hustled as fast as we could possibly hustle and got that airplane turned, got all the checklists done and configured for landing. And every time we configured, we were a little more concerned that something else was wrong because we got hit multiple times.
Oh, wow.
And so we had no idea what actually happened to the airplane. And what systems we had lost and so on and so forth. And so as we put the gear down and we put the flaps down for landing, we were watching for changes in the way the airplane flew. And all it really did was shake more and more as we slowed down a little bit, which was more and more concerning, as you can imagine. So anyway, long story short, as we slowed down for landing and got lined up, I think we landed at 3-4 left back there in Salt Lake City. The fire department was there to meet us. It was a normal landing. And, I didn't really think too much of it until we pulled off the runway and the fire department was meeting the airplane, and their duty there is to inspect and make sure that we're not on fire and that everything's okay so we can taxi to the gate. And the first indication I knew that it was really bad is when I saw the fireman's eyes, like the fire chief that was out there, his eyes lit up and they're pointing at the airplane. Oh. So I knew we'd done some significant damage. When we finally taxied back to the FBO where we picked up the Jazz, I was the first one off that airplane to go look and see, because I was really concerned with what the right engine looked like to see if, you know, how long we had before that thing had quit. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the left engine was literally blown to pieces. There was a hole in the fan. The hole in the fan blades that had to be at least 1 or 2 feet. And there was a huge blood spot on the nose of the airplane. Looked like we hit a pterodactyl or a cow. I knew we took multiple birds, but I had no idea what they were. So now they've just come back and said that those were not seagulls. They were pelicans. And I looked up to see what size pelicans are, and they're basically 30-pound birds. So it's like we hit a butterball turkey out there. And there was multiple.
If the birds would have hit the right engine, you would have just been gliding at that point, right?
Yeah, we'd have been gliding for sure. because as big as those birds were and what they did to the left engine, unless they were, you know, unless we took more than one, but you never know. But the beauty of that is you kind of, it makes you more comfortable to fly in a big airliner because it literally, that thing got shot out of the sky and made it back to the airport relatively unscathed.
Yeah.
The players were shaken up because obviously no idea what was going on, but they made it back and they went on and played the Grizzlies that night or the next day, I think.
I don't think Donovan Mitchell made that game though, did he?
No, he didn't. But he did send me a signed jersey.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's wild. Yeah, he did. Keep a hold of that thing.
Yeah, he. I saw in the news where he just needed a personal day or two. to
So he basically shit himself on the Delta flight. Yeah. Oh, man. That's a crazy story because
I can't imagine.
Like, just a little bit of turbulence and I freak out. I can't imagine the amount of turbulence you guys were having, like, as a player, like a passenger, not knowing what the fuck's going on. I would have been freaking out, man.
Yeah, people, they were really glad we saved their life. And I tell them all the time, I'm like, I wasn't saving your life. I was saving mine. I'm at the tip of that spear.
Ain't that true? That's so true.
I told my wife when I called her after that, I said, you know, it reminds me of why I still do this. I was the person that I would have wanted up front there. You know, of course, because everybody's a control freak to a certain extent. But it did remind me of why I do it. And, you know, we get paid a lot to be airline pilots, but it's not for the hours and hours of boredom. It's for the minutes of sheer terror that happen maybe once in a career. They don't happen very often.
Now you got that bar story to tell for a long time at the Grizzly Rose.
If it was just passengers, they wouldn't have paid any attention to it. But since it was the Jazz, it was a whole different big deal. I mean, like Eric said, it was on national news for a long time.
I remember Eric being like, did you see the Utah Jazz playing? I was like, yeah, like a couple days ago. He's like, yeah. He's like, Scott was the pilot. I was like, whoa, what? I was like, holy shit. That's pretty crazy. Yeah.
The player said that it actually, when it hit the engine, they saw a big fireball come out of the engine. We didn't get any fire indications in the cockpit. And of course, we can't see. They said it literally shot a fireball out the back, which makes sense because there's something in there that interrupts the airflow and then the fuel collects and then burns into a big fireball. But it shut it down, literally. They call it a flame out immediately.
It's just, imagine looking out the window and just seeing a fireball out of the engine. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Whatever you were saying over that intercom.
You know, I talked to him on final and told him, you know, I talked to him on the ground and we'd see him soon. And it was not a huge deal, but we lost an engine and that's why we had two engines. I think it's something like that.
Awesome. Cool. Well, so like we always say, anytime if you guys are ever in Denver, go check out the Grizzly Rose. And then also maybe one day, you know, maybe be on Delta Flight and Scott will be your pilot and you'll feel very safe. You'll feel very safe. Right.
And also let's talk about what's ahead for the Grizzly Rose. Like, I know things are starting to open up and everything. There are a few names out on the marquee now, we noticed the other night. So yes.
Looks good.
When do you feel like the Rose may come back, you know, full steam ahead?
I think that we're going to be about the middle of May. You know, I think you and I have talked about it a little bit. The All-Star Game's coming to Denver. Mm-hmm. The governor cannot keep us at a limited capacity, you know, all summer long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that we should be no later than the middle of May. And we are starting to book shows just so that we're ahead of the curve, you know, when it comes to everybody getting out there and getting on the road again. So we are actually actively looking to get some shows in there. We've got a lot of making up to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, we do.
Awesome. Well, we have two other team members because I feel like you guys know Eric, but you really don't know Eric. Honestly, I don't really know a ton about Eric, so I'm going to learn during this interview too. And then we're going to talk to Eddie too. So we're going to do that right after this.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So like I said, this episode, we're kind of doing a little bit of a meet the team. And another person, you actually have heard a couple times on the podcast here and there. He likes to pipe in. And that's Eddie, our, I guess, what would you call you? our producer, Eddie? Is that what we call you? Producer?
I call myself creator and
founder. Founder. And he's the amazing voice at the beginning of every episode. That's his voice, guys. That's his voice.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So and the only reason we changed it from the woman is because I never got to talk. So
he is the man who believes in no dead air.
That's right.
So Eddie is about to take this episode over.
I'm just going to sit back and let this man talk. No, but Eddie's got actually an incredible resume. Like I said, I'll let him talk about everything. But been in the business for a minute.
He is a legend in the country radio world.
You know, better than Icon because they're older. It's like it goes seasoned, veteran, legend, Icon. So you can reverse engineer that to find out just how old I really am.
So where did you get your start?
I grew up in Oklahoma, and I worked at the hometown radio station in Shawnee, Oklahoma, the only station in town. And all my friends were going to college, and I just didn't want to go to college. I was done with school. So I kind of made a deal with myself that I would do radio for 4 years and pretend it was college and see where I ended up. And just as I started my fourth year in radio, I got my first program director job. So
which is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, at 4 years, 22 years old. And so I've done radio. I've tried to get out. I was a program director in Denver at a big radio station in Denver. And then when I left there, I'm like, I'm done. I'm going to take that podcast I created with Scott over at the Grizzly Rose, and I'm going to bring Blake in to be the host, and I'm going to be a millionaire in 6 months. And so almost. Then I decided I'd get another job. And so I'm a program director of a station in Virginia Beach. So I figure if I can split my time between Denver and Virginia Beach, that's not a bad life.
We need to come visit you.
I know you guys do. We had some great festivals this year.
Yeah.
We're going to have you come out, maybe DJ, on the beach before one of the concerts. We had, I think we had a Dan and Shay on the beach. So that's my story.
And that's your story.
I'm so sad it took 4 minutes.
Well, let's talk about, though, in my opinion, probably. So if you guys remember back at the beginning of the first few of our episodes, there was always this court drawing. Of Eddie,
yes.
This court sketch, if you will, of Eddie.
And everyone would always ask, what is this?
I know.
Who is that? Who's the creepy dude up in the corner that just is like,
yeah. So tell the story about that, because that's got to be highlight of your career, right?
I don't think anyone's probably ever heard of this woman.
I have the pleasure of being the manager of the guy who grabbed Taylor Swift's ass. And
there's a fucking resume that's in bold on the resume right there.
I was just looking through some stuff and I found this picture, which I'll show you guys, and nobody else will see, but it's me and Taylor backstage. But wow. You can see right below it the sticker that says Exhibit 1, U.S. District Court. That is Exhibit 1 in the Taylor trial.
And so I remember this trial. It was like huge news, national news, insane.
So let's reset a little bit. Yeah, so Eddie was a key witness in this trial.
So I was at the concert, with the radio station, and my morning guys were there. And I was backstage, and we had just taken this backstage tour with Taylor's mom, where she shows you all the cool, trap doors and stuff so Taylor can pop down and change clothes, whatever. So I'm going backstage to meet the opening act, and I can't even remember what the guy's name was. Gosh, I don't remember. So I'm going backstage with a record rep, and the security guy stops us, and he's like, nobody's back here. So she flashes her laminate, her backstage pass, and says, he's with me. He's like, I'm sorry, nobody's allowed back here. And she's like, no, I have an all access. There is no access. Backstage is closed. And we're like, what the hell? So my phone rings, and it's the record rep, Taylor's record rep, Chris Lamb, who we all know, and is a prankster. And so Lamb says, "Hey, man, where are you?" I said, "I'm backstage. I'm trying to meet Joel Krause." That was his name. That was the guy. I said, "I'm trying to meet Joel Krause, and they won't let us back." He's like, "We got a problem." He's like, "Your morning guy grabbed Taylor's ass." And I'm like, "Oh, shut up. Will you come back here and get us back so I can meet Joel?" He's like, "No." So he walks up with Taylor's manager, who I've known forever as well, and is a good friend. And he's got his cell phone, and he has a picture, and it's pinched and zoomed in. And he's like, "Who do you know who this guy is?" I said, "Yeah, it's one of my morning guys. He's been ejected from the venue and banned for life from all Taylor Swift shows." I'm like, "What happened?" Mm-hmm. "He touched her inappropriately during the meet and greet." And I'm like, "Oh my God." It really did happen. I don't know if you've ever met Taylor's head of security, the British dude, the bald British guy. He scares me when he's smiling. And he goes out, pulls the guy out of his seat, says, "Get out." And so now my phone is blowing up from that dude saying, "They just kicked me out of the show. WTF, what's going on?" And I've got these guys. I'm going to need a timeout. So as it turns out, we did some investigating ended up firing him probably 2 days after that. Had a couple of meetings with him, talked to him, got his side of the story and all that. All quiet for over 2 years. And then my boss calls me one day and says, "Well, our buddy has resurfaced and there's a lawsuit. Come down to my office." And I come down, and he, instead of suing us, who I thought, we were prepared that he was going to sue us, he didn't. He sued Taylor. And we're just shaking our head, like, who sues Taylor Swift for accusing you of grabbing her butt? I'm not sure how this works. So, I get deposed. That was, I will share with you guys one day. It does say confidential, and it's a gag order, but they'll never know. And
it's over anyway.
And I'm joking. I'm not going to show it to you guys, but I totally am. Is the transcript of my deposition with those guys. Wow.
We're just going to post this to our Instagram page.
I wish I could.
Right.
I do my deposition and all this, and we're like, "Well, what's going to happen?" And so they're like, "Well, I don't know." Then Taylor's attorneys come in again, frighten me when they smile. So he comes in, takes my statement, and I said, "Well, what's going to happen now?" He goes, "Oh, we'll just tell him what we have and they'll drop the case. It's probably, they're probably just trying to money grab, just settle." Well, quietly, because I know nothing that's going on. I'm just a witness. And I read in People. I felt like Blake there for a minute when I see my name in People. Taylor countersued him for assault.
Okay. Yeah.
So Taylor sued him, and all the money she got was going to go to women's charities and for battered women. Well, they made a motion to dismiss that because they felt like that the jury would find for her so they could help the women. And I guess I see that. So they dismissed that and said, "Taylor, you can't have that money for charity." So Taylor comes back and countersues him for $1 because there has to be money. There has to be damages for it to be a lawsuit. It's a civil suit. So I get to go to court with Taylor, and it was the most bizarre thing. It was this tiny little courtroom. There were maybe 20 people, 20 seats in it, and you think that's more than it is, but there's six rows, so that's what, like three people on each side of the room. So they call me in, and I walk in, and there's freaking Taylor Swift sitting in the front row smiling, and I'm like walking in and getting sworn in and everything. And it was by Friday, the case started, the trial started on a Monday. By Friday, they just made a motion to dismiss.
Yeah.
And they did the basically, but then it had to continue. And this is what's unfair, is he sued Taylor's mom and my friend, who's her manager, and I'm sure he doesn't have Taylor money. I'm guessing maybe. And it was $1 million. It was like an excess of $1 million. But they dismissed all the Taylor stuff, but kept those with Taylor's management, and it continued to trial. But of course, they found in Taylor's favor. So
okay, I was like, they had to have found. Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, and in her company's favor and all that. He got nothing. And so she won the case and got $1.
And that dollar is a famous dollar in that music video.
That is a famous dollar in her.
She's it's in the bathtub scene, right?
Yes, the bathtub scene. And Look What You Made Me Do. Is that what the video was?
I think so.
Yeah. If you look, Taylor is in this bathtub full of
like with diamonds, right? Yep.
It's just a bathtub full of diamonds. And there is a single $1 bill laying right next to her shoulder.
That's super fucking savage. That is so fucking gangster, dude.
Savage. I didn't see it, and somebody screenshotted it and sent it to me. Said, "Holy,
yeah, I think I sent that to you."
Yeah,
fucking mic drop.
So subtle, but not subtle at all.
That was the dollar you got, Taylor.
Taylor that dollar. So, but it was crazy. I mean, I have never been so nervous in my life. I mean, it's like I went outside.
But you look so natural to the press.
Oh, dude. Well, here's what's funny is when I was at the radio station, I wasn't allowed to make any comments because it was a personnel issue. And we're not allowed to make comments about personnel issues. And so I get to the trial, and the attorney that was working with the radio station, I wasn't working at the station anymore. And their attorney was just kind of there to advise me if I had any questions. And he said, as soon as we walked out, it was great though, but I get up and I walk out and Taylor stands up right in the middle of the aisle and gives me a big hug, says, thank you. And I'm like, is this okay? Does it look like that we're friends? And I lied. I mean, is it going to be okay? And then her little brother introduced himself, thanked me, and her dad. And I was like, this is so cool. So then I walk out. Talk about anticlimactic. I've been worrying about this. I'm a Thursday witness. I've been worrying about this all week. And I finally do it. And you know, you drain after that. You're like, oh, I'm done. But then you walk out and unceremoniously, the cop puts you in the hallway and says, thank you. What do I do with my life now? So the attorney was walking me out and he said, I'm not going to walk out with you. They're probably going to want to talk to you. No one, everyone before me either worked for the radio station, worked for the record label, were all instructed not to talk to the press. And we're walking out. He shakes my hand. He says, you don't have a job. You don't have a boss. You talk to anybody you want to. Ooh. They're waiting for you. And I walk out and Well, it was crazy because I'm walking out and it's, you know, federal courthouse in downtown Denver. And they had catering tents set up, these white tents for all the media that was there. And I walk out the door and I just start walking down the sidewalk and I am 70% to being off the property. And I'm like, nobody even cares about me. And this one woman, really attractive woman, dressed very nicely with perfect hair, which tells me TV woman, has her iPhone sideways and is just shooting me and walking backwards. And I'm just like, hi, what do I do with my hands? Do I smile? And I'm like, she's got to be TV. And then a guy walks over, old school newspaper guy. He had that little narrow notepad that they used, the little spiral notepad. Mm-hmm. And he was writing stuff down. He's like, Mr. Haskell, can I ask you a couple of questions? And I stopped. His photographer just started the Blake knows this sound. I'm like, oh, shit, what am I doing? Dude, it was like dropping fish food in a fish tank at that point. People were running, tripping over each other to just get. There's a picture. We should post it on social.
I've seen that picture. Yeah. We could post it.
With the ET mic flag in my face.
Yeah, there's like 1,000 people around
and
here.
And just everybody gathered around. And then I just held court for 15 or 20 minutes.
Oh, did you? You stood there for a minute.
Yeah, he just leaned up against the wall. This picture is amazing.
I just leaned up against the wall. I'm like, what else would you like to know? So, it was the most bizarre experience. And then I remember I went to a coffee shop in Cherry Creek because I was just so weirded out. And I just scrolled the coverage. And you could see it shift at about 2 o'clock after I finished. You could just see my name start trending. It's all about me as the witness now. Mm-hmm, and that is when I saw the world famous courtroom rendering of myself. And I was, A, it looks nothing like me. But B, you know what? There's nobody else on this show that has a court sketch that isn't in jail right now. So
yeah, very true, very true.
But the freakiest thing, and this really freaked me out more than it should. That night I got home about, I guess it was about 8. I mean, I literally just sat there going, I've got this adrenaline going. So I get home and I get my mail and there's a handwritten piece of paper. And it says, Mr. Haskell, I am with like the Melbourne news agency in Australia. And I'm here covering the Taylor Swift trial. And I would love to talk to you at my house.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
In my mailbox, in an envelope. And I'm like, he knows where I live. I bet the guy that grabbed Taylor Swift's butt knows where I live. And he's going to kill me tonight in my sleep. I know what's going to happen. And so I really thought I was going to die that night, and I didn't. I mean, it's not saving an NBA team as a pilot. But I also have my story.
It was bigger news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I mean, how long were you in the news cycle? You know, So I, when I came to work here, it's so funny because people will never say anything, and I've got this new staff, and then I'll say something about, well, blah blah blah, Taylor Swift, and like, oh my God, I wanted to ask you about that. So, and then it's a half hour conversation at that point. But
I was going to say, well, if you're so close to Taylor, if you want to maybe throw in a word on Behind the Rose podcast, get her on here. We'd really appreciate that. Yeah, we'd really appreciate that.
I mean,
you could text her mom, her brother, manager, and her.
She played the Rose 2 nights when she was 17.
I think I gave you a ticket stub from that somehow.
It was a $10 ticket.
That's wild. Yeah.
I saw the picture actually this weekend again by the bathroom. I always walk by and I'm like, oh my God, that's like Taylor at like 16 or whenever it was. Yeah.
Everybody has played the Grizzly Rose.
Oh, that's insane.
We're going to get her on. There's our next, we're going to get her on eventually.
I'll just say, hey, remember when I helped you out?
Yeah.
Could you maybe just hop on for a little bit?
Just a little segment.
Favorite part of all that was the glasses that you wore, looking so cool, was some Eric Paslay promo glasses.
Everybody was like, dude, you looked fire with your Ray-Bans. I'm like, dude, those aren't Ray-Bans. Eric Paslay, who we had on the original podcast, Eric Paslay had these Ray-Ban knockoffs. And he had a song called High Class. And on one side, it said Eric Paslay. The other side, it says High Class. Everybody would be like, look at you with your Ray-Bans. I was like, are you kidding me with Ray-Bans? These came in a plastic bag to the radio station. And I stole my music director's too, so I'd have an extra pair.
We'll have to throw up the picture of you with all the mics around you and your court sketch again. We'll throw that up on the social when this drops.
Yeah. It was a day.
It was. Cool. And now we have one last member of the team, Eric Bradley, the most mysterious of everybody on the team.
Your buddy, Eric.
Yeah, no, you do. You just a lot of stuff.
I have nothing like these last two. This is going to be really hard to fucking follow up here.
I feel like you do. You just can't talk about most of the stories that
I cannot. Definitely cannot.
But we'll get to you. We'll talk about Eric right after this. All right, so the fourth and final member of the team, Eric Bradley, my buddy, as I say, my buddy Eric Bradley. Honestly, I get asked all the time, like, just questions about Eric, like, where does he come from? How did he get started in this industry? And honestly, most of the time, I just say, you're going to have to ask him because
nobody
been around since a very long time.
I remember the first time, not the first time, but I brought Eric to a bunch of Grizzly Rose shows. Fun fact, Eric never listened to country music.
Still kind of don't.
Right. And until we met and I took him to a couple of shows And he's like, this is pretty cool. These people are already really cool. So I was taking him to Grizzly Rose with me all the time. And Scott's like, who's this dude? I was like, ah, it's my friend, Eric. And he's like, what does he do? I'm like, I don't know. It's complicated.
Scott still doesn't know.
Yeah, Scott still doesn't. I still have no idea. All Scott knows is when you bring Blake or one of your bachelor buddies to the Rose, people flock around you. He's like, oh, I know what he does now. Okay, I got it.
Eric, if people were to ask you what you do, what would you say?
Well, I don't know how to answer that anymore. It's just kind of snowballed into like, I have no idea what I do even anymore. But like, I was naturally like a sports marketing agent that worked with like NFL talent and NBA and just, you know, just pro athletes, booking marketing deals for them, you know, radio, TV endorsements, public, private appearances, autograph signings, all that stuff. So that, I mean, that's what I do by nature. And then that kind of transitioned into like, you know, working with, you know, Bachelor World talent and trying to bring that element of pro sports to the country world, bringing them endorsement deals, like mainstream, like revenue streams, like what we do with athletes.
So who was the first athlete you worked with?
Yeah, Terrell Davis, actually.
And how old were you?
Probably like 15 at the time.
Crazy up.
Yeah.
How'd that happen? What'd you do?
Shit, this is going to be weird. So before it was a big thing, we used to get autographs and like sell them when we were kids, like me and a couple high school buddies. And the places that we were, you know, selling them to back then were like, hey, you have access to these guys. See if, you know, TD will sign, you know, 300 items for $1,000. And at that time, Terrell Davis wasn't even on the football field yet. He had made a big tackle in his first ever game. And then he had like a couple big rushes, like, let's just see if we can get him. So I offered it to him and he did it in the back of his like Ford Bronco and just signed it right there at Dove Valley. And so that's kind of how it, and then it's turned into like trading appearances for like T-Mobile cell phones or VoiceStream cell phones back then. Cause like back then, cellular service was expensive as hell.
Yeah.
So these guys were trying to get two or three phones, you know, locker room phones, because you know you got your main one, family one, side pieces. So like, you know, so oh, you had the Nextel chirps and the sidekicks back then, and they weren't cheap. So they would trade like autograph appearances like at the stores for free service for like a year, and then it just kind of snowballed. And you know, I would do a lot for local guys, and then, you know, the original guys I'd work for or work with would go on to like other teams and other markets. And I just kind of built it as it went. And my name just always stuck in locker rooms.
When I met you because we get asked that a lot. So I met Eric about 3 years ago. Colton Underwood introduced me, and we just kind of hit it off. First of all, we're like the only single people like around. So like we would always, every Friday, Saturday night, we'd hit each other up like, what are you doing?
And as Eddie and Scott know, or like any artist that has ever been on our show who I'm friends with, I always go to the show by myself. I never want to like babysit or be in charge of like, oh God, I don't know if I could trust it. Cause it's a different world when you're backstage. Like you're actually in the artist, like that's their home. Like that's their comfort zone and safe zone. So it's like when I first met Blake, you know, I knew Blake was a massive country fan. I was like, started bringing Blake around. I was like, yo, you want to come to these shows with me? I think our first show was Jared Neiman at the Rose.
Yeah, at the Rose. Yeah.
Speaking of which, Jared Neiman, former house band of the Grizzly Rose, which a lot of people don't know.
Yeah.
Everyone always thinks that like I'm Blake's plus one, but definitely.
No, it's the opposite.
Yeah, Blake is my plus one at every country show, especially Stagecoach.
Yeah.
What's funny about Eric is Eddie started bringing him around and I never could figure out who the hell he was or what he was doing. But pretty soon he knew more artists and managers and then Eddie and I combined.
Yeah, the bullshit is I took Eric to his first country show, and then fast forward a year and I'm out in the audience and I see Eric on stage at the soundboard. And I'm like, dude, how'd you get there? Oh, well, Jeff, the tour manager. Yeah. I'm like, well, how'd you meet him? Oh, last time when you brought me, I chatted with him. And it's in radio, there were two country stations in Denver. And so they could never give me anything because the other guys would get pissed. So Eric, there is no competitor for Eric.
So, true,
so it's like, yeah, come on, brother. And so,
well, it was before like a year later. It was like a month later when we're at Sam Hunt and Michael Ray at like the Ogden. It was probably the smallest venue Sam Hunt will ever do.
This stings. This story stings.
So I was at that in the stands.
Yeah,
I was in the crowd at that concert, bro.
Blake didn't know either.
I didn't know either of you. I was in the crowd at
three or 4 years before Blake was on the show.
Yeah, this is 2015, maybe 2016.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Eric, revel in it.
Well, I think you tell it better because you were the one waiting in the alley, and I was like, oh, he's with me. Because I had the Sam Hunt Graffiti Tour All Access badge.
Yeah, so the record label is like, your tickets will be at front of house. So I go to front of, you know, the box office, and I'm like, hi, I have some passes here for Michael Ray. And they're like, I don't have anything for you. I was like, all right. So I'm in the alley on the phone trying to call the record label and say, hey, there, my passes aren't here. Eric is standing in the doorway and says, he's with me. And they walk my ass right in like I'm a VIP.
That sounds so typical.
Dude, Eric, I remember the first time I really, well, the big concert, actually, I think even before Jared Neiman, maybe, it was you, me, Jason, and Colton. We went to Kenny Chesney at Mile High, and I remember still at that point, you'd gotten Grizzly Rose and everything, but I was still like, you know, we were still like feeling each other. I was like, I don't know, is Eric all talk or is he not? Hell no,
this is
he's
a
not.
Fucking
like,
stadium show with 75,000 people.
We're backstage hugging Thomas Red, fucking drinking beer with Kenny Chesney. I was like, what is happening? Who is this guy? I was like, I think I'm gonna yeah, keep this guy in my life for a long time.
Yeah. Blake really used me. Now we've got a podcast, you know, we've made him a fucking DJ. Fucking we're about DJ to in like the country relationships.
Let me tell you what a salesman Eric is. I've got this podcast, I've done 21 episodes. I have poured my blood, sweat, and tears into being at the Grizzly Rose every, you know, on Fridays at 3 p.m. So
Eddie would get pissed off because there was no parking spot for him at the Grizzly Rose.
Right. I can't even get a damn parking space at the Grizzly Rose. I gotta park a block away. I gotta go wait outside. It is not glamour, you know. It's so I'm standing outside the bus. No, I'm supposed to be here. I do a podcast called Behind the Rose. It's the official Grizzly Rose podcast. Technically, I work here. And so I'm standing outside the bus. Oh, he'll see you now. So I do this and I gotta go home. I edit it. I do that. 21 episodes, I do that. And I remember the day Eric kept saying, man, I want to get Blake involved with this thing. I think it would be great. Blake loves country music. It's Bachelor Nation. We marry the two. And I'm like, yeah, okay,
sure. Because that Behind the Rose had two meanings for me.
Which I didn't know. Yeah. So I remember we had talked for, I kid you not, 6 months. And one, I remember it was a Thanksgiving weekend. I remember I was on the phone with Eric and I was like, oh, dude. Mind you, never watched a Bachelor episode in my life.
Still hasn't.
And I said, wait, don't they give a rose at the end of the show? Oh, my God. So Behind the Rose could be Behind the Grizzly Rose, but it also could be stories behind the rose. And he's like, are you kidding me? That's why I asked you in the first place. So for 6 months, I'm just dicking around going, I don't know, maybe. I don't get where Blake fits in. And so anyway, to my point about what a great salesman Eric is, he gets this whole thing sold to me. And somehow, I'm not even on the fucking show. Now it's the Blake Horstman hour. So yeah, with his buddy Eric.
Did that happen?
Not with co-founder, of the podcast Eddie Haskell. Oh hell no, it's my buddy Eric. So, yeah.
Oh fuck, that's funny. Hey. Yep. And now here we are. Here we are now.
Yeah, we've got to sum up his career. He's a salesman extraordinaire.
I just make shit happen.
Yeah, I like his marketing statement. I make shit happen.
I just make
literally,
shit happen.
I didn't even know how to DJ a year and a half ago, and now Eric's got me opening up for Cascade here in 3 months. So that's basically.
And hopefully we'll be on tour with a couple artists coming up here.
Yeah,
soon.
We got a lot. We got a big year coming.
There's a lot of things in the works coming.
A lot
up.
Of things in the works. It's gonna be a fun year.
The most wild thing is like going back to the, you know, and I'm so grateful and thankful for like, you know, Eddie and Scott. Like the country relationships that I've built, I would have never have guessed like this is where it would have taken us or me or just the idea of just like, I'm just a networker. Like, I don't know I'm networking, but I'll always meet people in a relationships. Like, relationships are key to everything. Building organic relationships, and just to think, like, the people who we have talked to and built relationships with, I'm saying relationships a hell of a lot right now, but to think that that's gotten us to possibly being on tour with like country artists. And it just, it's mind blowing to me. It's like every day, I still can't even believe this is like happening. And we talk with the top artists in the world on this podcast, and there's a lot more to come.
And to wrap up this very special episode, to tell you everything you need to know about Eric, our guest backed out and he's like, fuck it, let's just talk to each other. That is a guy who makes shit happen.
That's right. Yep.
No, this is a perfect time for this episode because I think a lot of people are wondering. We got a decent amount of loyal followers now and loyal listeners. And they're like, who is everybody?
Yeah.
You know, so it's perfect. Yeah. So now you know the team.
And as we saw today on the Bachelor, Scoop posed a question about who should replace Rachel Lindsay on Becca, what Bachelor Happy Hour? And everyone said Blake. So maybe this is the last time we'll be hearing from Blake on Behind the Rose.
Yeah, right. The show would never have me on their official podcast.
God, no. They don't even want you on Paradise.
Yeah, they would. They would fucking, oh God. Yeah, right. I'm way too honest about the show.
Let's poach Becca and bring her over here.
Yeah, right. No, she's got a good gig up
and then,
there.
Then so. It'll be Blake, Becca, and their buddy, Eric.
Oh, good stuff, guys. Well, yeah, that's the team. So we'll do some check-ins too with everybody as we go along and stuff because we got some big things coming. But
hey, going to Mexico.
Yeah, we are leaving to Mexico here in next weekend. Ben Higgins' bachelor party next week. That's be fun.
I'm just gonna tease it. Like I just can't wait to see Nick Viall and Blake Horseman in the same room together.
Yeah, we'll just fist fight. No big deal. We'll just have a couple of fist fights. Probably.
I'm bringing boxing gloves. We're gonna get this.
The Horseman Files.
We're gonna have a lot to talk
the
about.
The Horseman Files. Shots fired by Eddie. Holy shit.
That's great.
Good night, everybody.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening, everyone. Be sure to follow our Instagram at Behind the Rose Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, comment, like, and give us all 5 of those damn stars. Behind the Rose is recorded on site at the world famous Grizzly Rose or wherever we happen to be. See you next time, Behind the Rose.